So today is our third of the series, Raising G-Rated Kids in an R-Rated World. And there's some similarities of raising children and raising a garden. You need good soil, you're planting, you're watering, you're nurturing, you're providing sunshine. So I'm going to invite Connie to come up and join me. She's made good her escape. I owe her a really good dinner for these two times that she's been up here. See, I had thought, this is out of her comfort box. And this is the first time ever in the 16 years that I've pastored River of Life that she's joined me on stage. So, you get to pick the restaurant. Nate's going to be our interviewer, and before we do that, Nate's got kind of a special announcement.
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to congratulate Paul and Carrie on their new baby. Paige Deborah Dufresne was born April 10th, and we just got a small gift for you. And I want to just congratulate you on half of River of Life. Okay, I get to start with the questions here today. 84 of them.
No. Oh, no.
No, there's only 74. Okay. Teenagers are moving from adolescence to adulthood. What things did you do to help them during that transition?
And just a little background, I think some of you know already, these are scripted. And so we'd pass them on to him, and Connie and I have already discussed, and we've got some passages we looked at. We're both humbled because we're aware more of the mistakes than we are the successes of raising our teenage kids. But there are two surprise questions that he has that we don't know what he's going to ask, that's spontaneous. But teenagers moving from adolescence to adulthood, they're really moving just from this literal thinking to being able to understand more conceptual and abstract. And at first, that's frustrating because they're asking a lot of questions and they're maybe pressing some boundaries. Maybe they are. And that gets frustrating at first because they're not just taking things for face value. During those years of toddler to elementary, parents, you pretty much are heroes. And, you know, my dad's stronger than your dad. You get in the teenage years, you're not the hero anymore. And there's shared loyalties with friends, with other teachers. And sometimes you're the heel. So there's critical or challenging of previous beliefs. And parenting is both easier and harder when they're teenagers. It's easier because they can clothe themselves, feed themselves. I mean, they're becoming young adults, so they're pretty independent. But that also makes it harder because sometimes they ask some hard questions and they give you a stronger pushback. Some of the things that we've done is having those meaningful adult conversations with them and sometimes beating them to the punch of asking the questions. So you watch the news, and there's injustices going on, and saying, what do you think about that? You think that's fair? How does fair work out in our world, and we have a just God? And so the advantage of them having that more adult mind is having those adult conversations and not always having the right answers and being comfortable with that, of saying, I'm not so sure. What else do we want to say?
We gave them more responsibilities and less restrictions. That's one thing that we've done. Yeah. Growing. So if they're going to make a mistake, you'd like to have them make them while they're in the home with you, and then you could help them process through that.
Did you break your glasses?
No, I just forgot them.
We're borrowing cheaters. I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13:11. When I was a child,
I'll use this. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. And that's a great verse, you know, as children are growing from that child to teenager, sometimes they revert back to childish ways. But there's also the conflict of, you know, why does my older brother, why does my older sister get to stay up till 11 o'clock and I got to go to bed at 9? You've maybe heard that in your families if you have children. Maybe you said that. And we weren't really good at heading off those questions at the past. They just came up and we said, well, they get to stay up later, but they also have more work, more responsibilities. So that whole less restrictions, more responsibilities was helping them as well grow into adulthood.
Next. All right, awesome. Some good answers. Teenagers are too old for timeouts or spankings. How did you discipline your children when they were teenagers?
Discipline was more reduced privileges and consequences of their mistakes that they made. Like one was like lying, and so the result was broken trust. So there's between us and the kids. And so the results of that, we had to ask those questions more of them. Okay, what are you going to do? Where are you going to be? And, well, don't you trust me? I go, well, now you got to re-earn that trust in a sense. And that's how we dealt with that one.
So we talked about, you know, how God does, when he forgives, it's, we say, when God forgives, he forgets. I said it's harder as a parent because I don't forget. You know, you broke that trust. And I want to forgive you like Jesus. But there's got to be some trust building going on. And so we will be kind of monitoring a little bit closely. Until we feel that there's that security. And so trying to model what Jesus did is really hard. But talking to him up front, saying, well, here's how Jesus does. When our sins are forgiven, he's not bringing them back. I said, I'll do my best to not bring it back and fling it in your face and use it as a power against you. But I have a harder time forgetting, and so I'm going to be asking some questions. Because trust was broken. We had one of our kids said that he was at work. And we found out he wasn't at work. Instead was with some friends doing some other things. And when we found out, we had that discussion.
Anything else on that?
Mm-hmm. What were some common arguments over and how did you resolve them with your teenagers?
The questions. They were pretty good about calling up and saying, hey, after work, I want to go over to Bobby's. And so we'd say, who's Bobby? What are you going to be doing? How late are you going to be there? What time are you going to be home? Is your homework done? Those were the things that commonly exasperated our children. And I shared that verse a couple weeks ago. From Ephesians, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you, may enjoy long life on earth. It's a good verse for your children when they're very young. But the next part, fathers, do not exasperate your children. And those questions exasperated them. In our book, those were good questions. They were valid questions. But that was a frustration for our children. At times, it exasperated them. So we would hear the call, you know, can I go? And one of the tips that we got as parents that really was a good tip from another parent said, say yes as often as you can. So we want to say yes. But before that, yes, it's like, okay, you know, is the homework done? How late are you going to be? What are you going to be doing? Who's going to be there? All those kinds of questions. I don't know that we resolved it well.
Because those questions are still good to ask.
I mean, And as our children got older, and some of them went to the community college here, so now they're a college student. They're out of high school, and they are young adults. They've got their own vehicle, but they're living at home. And just sitting down with them saying, look, you know, if you were at college, you'd be doing a lot of things that we wouldn't know about. But because you are here at home, we know when you drive home. We know what time you're arriving. So out of courtesy, just tell us how late are you going to be staying. So we got to have a window and leave the door unlocked and those kind of things. But it was a transition point, too, of that high school years to college years while they're still at home, of giving them responsibilities. But then there's that courtesy because they are in our home.
Then we also went for you called it the win-win, try to win-win. And that was not always the case because sometimes they just needed to trust that our decision was best for them because we loved them. And so it wasn't always win-win.
Some of you in your workplaces in the business world have heard of that, trying to go for the win-win. And it's not using the power up, well, we're your parents, you got to obey us, just do it. Of saying, okay, I know this. If it goes this way, we've won and you've lost. How can we, and we'll put that on them, how can we go for win-win? Because if we just carte blanche say, you know, stay out as late as you want, do whatever you want, we feel we've lost and you've won, so what's a win-win here? That was helpful, but it didn't always work out as a win-win or was perceived as a win-win.
Yeah, just in their eyes anyways.
What were the standards and expectations for school and grades?
We had a B, average minimum, and if they got below that, then we looked into, okay, there'd be no sports or no extra activity until they maintained that.
One thing Connie, in preparing our answers, said, you know, be on the same page together. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't real good at this, was I?
No.
So I said, man, you are working way too hard on this homework. And if I was doing this, I would. So Connie was always far more studious in school, and I was usually skipping in school. And so we could have been better on the same page there, and we weren't. Oh, you talked about parent-teacher conference. Why don't you?
Oh, yeah. When you go to parent-teacher conferences, even continue that in high school. Even if they're doing well, you know, and say, well, why do I need to go? It's a good contact, and it's also a good chance, time to ask your teachers, okay, they say you're doing good. Okay, how else are they doing? Have you seen any changes? How are they relating with others in school? Do you see a change in friendships? Or, you know, teachers have a good heads up of, especially if you're proactive in that, and then, oh, here's a parent that's has their child, you know, in their heart and wants to see success in their lives, in their schooling, and also in their relationships at school.
And one of your children shared on Easter Sunday about the fact that you didn't let them get their driver's license at the age of 16. Can you tell us a little bit more about your decisions there and how you handled it?
Yeah, on Easter Sunday, we had most of our kids here, and it was kind of as a teaser leading into this series. So they gave, you know, what thing we did well as parents and what thing we didn't, that we missed the boat. And so that was one of the missed the boat things that one of our kids felt, that we didn't let them drive when they were 16. They didn't have their license. And I was the one behind that. I distinctly remember reading a little factoid in Reader's Digest. It went something on this. This is current statistics. And this comes from the National Teen Driving Stats, according to the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. 16-year-olds have higher crash rates than drivers of any other age. The crash rates per mile driven is twice as high for a 16-year-old as it is for 18- and 19-year-olds. So I thought, I love my kids. I don't want to see them crash. Accidents leading cause of death among that 13- to 19-year-old range. So I said, I'll wait a year. And rather than at age 16 having that conversation, we talked about it earlier. And so our oldest wasn't that bucky about it at all. And it was like, okay. So the next one knew that was the pattern. It was a middle one, really, that I think had the hardest time. And he was the one that voiced this. But it was that aspect of, hey, if I can cut down that accident rate by half by just waiting 1 year, I'll wait a year. And so that's what we did. And it's kind of a rite of passage, you know. All the classmates are pumped and waiting for their 16th birthday, and they talk to one another. So, hey, you're 16. Why aren't you driving? My parents kind of got this statistic in their head. But about two of every three teenagers killed in a motor vehicle crash in 2009 were males. So I have my three boys. That was a deal. The ability, and not just their own driving ability, it's their reacting to others around them. Others that are texting, talking on their cell phones, others that are driving erratically because they're sleepy or tired or they've been drinking. April 25th, 2 years ago, we had three teenagers in our community that were killed on the bridge, and I saw they put new balloons and flowers out on the anniversary. And if I believe the news reports found that the other vehicle had passed the legal limit of alcohol. And so you had a 16-year-old who had their license 3 weeks earlier out at 2:30 in the morning. The car crossed over into their lane, and six lives were lost. It's an emotional thing that locks it in easy for me. I'd do that over again, absolutely. But it's a hard sell because all the classmates, this is a rite of passage, you know, because all the classmates are getting it. So parents, we're saying some things that we've done here and reasonings for it, some of them scriptural, some of them emotional. There's a lot of gray areas in raising teenagers. In raising children, a hot stove is going to burn the hands of every child that touches that hot stove. That's, you know, running out into a busy street is going to be dangerous for any child. But teenagers, and knowing also we talked about every one of our child was different. And I think coming into parenting, we had a mindset, we're going to be fair to all of our children. So at this age, all of our children are going to have these rules. But guess what? Some of them were more responsible than others. And so they could get, you know, those responsibilities quicker and less restrictions pulled. Others needed restrictions longer. And so fairness, that's not fair. He got to do this when he was 18.
No, life's not fair, is it?
I got something to add on that question. When they turned 17, was there restrictions? Was it 17 they got their licenses? Was there restrictions at the beginning on that also as far as times and...
Time? Or is...
How many
past years are going? Oh, yeah. There was nobody else in the car but our... As far as friends, because isn't there a law you can only have?
I think there is a law.
So, whatever that law was, I knew it at the time and stuck to it.
But some of ours was before that law was enacted.
I don't remember. But I don't think we had, or we knew who was going to be, and then we made sure the parents also knew if there was somebody that other than our kids in the car. You know, you need to get permission from your parents to ride with.
All right. How about letting your children have jobs or employment outside of high school, where they're in school?
We allowed it and encouraged it unless their schoolwork suffered from it. And then during that process, we taught them the money issue, like... tithe, save, and spend. and also there when I'm the when they started working, the place would want them work every, you know, on the weekends, including Sunday. And he said to the kids, you know, they were all kind of nervous about this. I said, well, you go talk to them. You say, you know, I will work on Sundays if it's after this time. And they're all concerned. Well, they won't let me do it. Well, if you ask, they will. You are a good worker. It's all right for you to ask that. And they always honored that, that workplace. And if they didn't, I said, well, we'll find another place to work, you know.
Because when I began at River of Life, then I was leading the youth group, the high school youth group, and it was a similar story. Employees value good workers. So your sons, daughters, they're honest, they're hardworking, and they want to pull them in for as many hours as they can, and they do. So suddenly they would make a request and say, well, good, I don't have to work on Sunday or Wednesday nights when the youth group was or this or that. And then suddenly they're name shows up on the schedule, Sunday right during church service, Sunday or Wednesday night as well. And I'd say, listen, you're a hard worker, you're honest. If they're a good employer, then they're gonna let you go to church, they're going to let you go to youth group. And they did. But that was always kind of a tense point for them. And it was a good growing up point for them having that conversation, going to their manager, supervisor, owner, and saying, hey, I will give you the best while I'm here. And you know that. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to hard work. I'm going to give you the best bang for your dollar. But I'm asking that I not be scheduled at this block and at this block. And they did. And I told them, if they don't, that's not the place for you to be working. So we would use a scan and look for good fits for good businesses. And if we ever had one of our children come in where they had a manager, supervisor, owner just ream them out and cuss, we'd say, this isn't the job for you. They're not going to be learning sound and healthy work habits there.
Are there any questions before we move on to the audience?
Hey. Did that ever happen, though, where you had to say when your kids started, you had to put your notice
in? No, I don't think we had that.
Looking back, we see one employment that probably was not a good, where I think there was an unhealthy mix there, and I think a lot of bad influences that if we would have been more proactive, we would have said, get a different job.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think that's a good point about even when they're that young, monitoring where they work and the influences it can have on their work habits and in their lives too.
I want to add just a couple things. Romans 3:23-24, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it is the Lord you're serving. And that click for them of, you know, you're working for Cub Foods here in town, but you're also working for the Lord, and His eyes are on you. And it was a great world for our children because prior to that, school clothes shopping, if you wanted the name brand jeans that we weren't willing to spend money for, that came out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. And they had empty pockets prior to work. And so now that they had work, they could get those name brand jeans. But what we saw then from our children that was kind of a unique thing to see is before it was like, we don't want to be seen dead here in Shalom Shop looking around at used clothing or Plato's Closet or any other place. That was kind of embarrassing for them. That is their key place to go now. Goodwill, Plato's Closet. Because, I mean, they've learned the value of a dollar. And regarding driving, once they got their own car, had their own job, it was their dollars went in for gas, their dollars went in for insurance. If their tires wore out from spinning around too much and doing donuts, it was their money for that. If they got a ticket, it was their money and their insurance went up. Of course, they were on our policy, and ours went up as well. But they were doing it, and that eliminated a lot of shenanigans. Because they bore the weight. Again, I mean, they're not getting spankings or timeouts, but it was a financial hit to them if they're horsing around. I think they got less speeding tickets than I did. Yep.
Then you always phone out who got a speeding ticket if they didn't tell us because it showed on our insurance. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing we prayed about is we prayed that the Lord would show us anything that they're, what would you say, trying to hide from us or from others, that it would come out, that would come out. And it did, probably not 100% of the time, but the major ones did.
Because we'd say, and I think it scared them at first, that's okay. You know, you've given your life to the Lord, and His eyes are on you. And we've prayed for you and dedicated you to the Lord. And we're asking His eyes to be on you and the Holy Spirit to reveal to us if there's anything going wrong, if you're trying to duck. So don't try to get away with anything because you're not. Maybe scared them. But I believe it. I really do believe that there's a lot of things that our eyes as parents can't be on them 24/7. But I believe that the Holy Spirit can alert us to situations that are harmful for them, relationships that are bad, and even when your children are younger, just danger.
I know this was mentioned on Easter also about your kids not allowed to date or go to prom in high school. Tell us why, and would you change that standard today?
Sure.
I kind of put this down. And again, it's not a discussion you have when prom is coming up.
Can I date at 15 or 14?
Right.
You gotta decide that ahead of time.
So I just said, boys, as soon as you are able to financially provide food, clothing, and shelter, you can date. And that's how we had it. And my conviction was, dating just sets up for a lot of unhealthy patterns, because what we would see over and over and over is a dating relationship happens, it sours, they break up. A new dating relationship happens, they sour, it breaks up. And a pattern of when something can't get settled, the solution is you break up. And I just think that isn't helpful for any relationship. And so we saw dating really as that step of, this is the one that I would want to marry and spend the rest of my life with. And so I'm in that place of being ready to provide food, clothing, shelter for them. And so it eliminated all of that. And we encouraged on the positive end, have lots of friends. Have a bunch of friends that are guys. Have a bunch of friends that are gals. Do all kinds of fun activities as a group. But save that exclusive relationship for when you're really ready to get married. And then for our girls as well, of saying, you know what, a young man wants to come and date you. I tell our girls how pretty they are, and they're going to be banging the door down. You send them to dad first. So they knew that. And it was easy for them, because sometimes they just didn't feel strong enough to be able to say, no, I'm not interested in dating you. You give me the creeps or what, you know, whatever. And so they could say, call my dad. And this is just the world. Oh, your daddy has to give. Yes, he does have to give permission here. So once this young man was in a place, and so we would grill him. We had one that we really wondered. And you're probably really going to think this is dorky. But I said, listen, why don't you go home and just show me on paper and kind of just crunch the numbers where you're at? Because this just, here's my thinking, is that if you're believing that this may lead to marriage, this is something that's big and we need to know. And it can sound not egalitarian, which means, you know, like, she's got to provide some income as well. But guess what? When it's baby time, you're not sharing that. She's having the baby and needs time off of work. And if you're not able to supply, stand financially with that, there's going to be a problem. There was one other thing I was thinking as well. Oh, a big thing for us was, how many past relationships have you had? We would ask our son or daughter, are you number one? Because there's something of protecting, honoring, breaking no ground. If you're number seven, you know, how far did these previous relationships go and how long were they? If someone was with a guy or gal for 3 years, broke up last week, and now they're wanting to go out, I think that's a bad, you know. And I would just say, you don't want to be rebound. So give them some time. If they've been going with this person for 3 years, they need some time off. And we've said that for our own children, when they've had a relationship that was pretty strong and looked like it was going to lead to marriage, and it didn't, we would say, you get with God and you pray, because you need a break and you don't want just to rebound. And the enemy will do that. He'll bring up somebody, and maybe you have similar stories and you're helping one another, or this or this. I say, you get with God and you get kind of a time period. And I would put a strong hint saying, I think you need somewhere between 6 months and a year before you get into a strong relationship again.
Then if you decide to go the dating route, decide ahead of time, okay, what's that going to look like? I'm going to allow my children to date. Is there an age? And am I going to have in that perimeter, are you going to say, okay, you could go out and date, it's group date only. Or if you decide, okay, you're going to allow them to date singly, go out to a movie, it's okay. Just what time period are you going to put that in for them? You know what I'm trying to say? So you need to decide that whole aspect of that whole dating situation there.
Alone times. We've talked to our kids. We've got two that, you know, well, all of our kids are out of the house. So we say, hey, you know, there's just off limits. Your bedroom is absolutely off limits. If they're at a dorm in college, their bedroom is their living room, their kitchen, and everything. I'd say you meet in the commons, because this is your bedroom. It's a personal, private area. Never alone in a room. If you're at the house and the mom and dad are gone, you say, okay, let's go to the park. Let's go to the, you know, Caribou Coffee, but we're not going to be here alone. And I said, it's not that I don't trust you, but there's that verse in the Bible that talks about not even the appearance of evil. So you want to be just upright. And I say, guys, you know, you love Jesus, you're strong, you want to save sex until marriage, but it is very hard. And so just put some of these things that help you and keep you from crossing lines you don't want to cross. That's a good point of, I'm alone, and there's not too many in the boat that we were at. And a lot of my pastor colleagues as well, kind of like, really? You don't let them date? Come on, they need to learn about the other gender and how to get along. And I said, I think most of the learning is not good learning. And I think they can learn in that group by having a lot of friends. But many and most will choose to allow dating. And it's kind of cutesy-cutesy. You see movies, and they're like, you know, practically just out of elementary school and in middle school dating, and everyone thinks it's cute and wonderful, and I think it's trouble. So what Connie said is, think now of what age you want to go with. Have that talk, 3 years before they get that age? Yeah. So Paul, start telling Paige right now. That guy, he's going to have to come and see me and scare him. Yes.
Good scare.
How did you go about enforcing that? Did you have any issues, like, as far as not being able to keep eyes on him during the school days? And
oh, for dating?
That's kind of a
boy-girl thing? Is that what he's asking?
Yeah, for that.
Well, anything.
Oh.
I just have a friend that's talking about that, and so he's got his neighbor said, "Oh, I see your daughter and so-and-so are going out."
Really?
And your kids find out there's a lot of eyes on them, you know, of neighbors, neighborhood, community.
Which is a good thing. I like that.
And Facebook. I'm in a relationship with.
Yeah, so there was issues. There was one that really wanted to date. This is open house graduation. So how did we do that? We did let them date after graduation, even though I think they were probably kind of. But then this child came back to us later and said, well, what was the words? I wish I would never have started dating until I was done with this. I'm thinking, yes. But
we had one of our children, too, that I don't know how it fell through the cracks, but they were behind on some classes and were not going to graduate, right? And so when that came up, that was a big deal. The grades was one deal. The lying and deceiving was the bigger deal. And so, again, they had to bear their consequences because they had to get over to the ALC, get some classes taken care of, do some catch-up with some other ones, meet with the teachers, and they had to carry that. Or
drop out of the sport that
this
child was in. And
we didn't talk about that.
Confront the coach and the team.
With different capacities. And even this morning we said, well, what if... Because one of our children just could not take tests. He would just seize up, lock up, and he just destroyed himself on tests. Regular work was fine. But much of the grading was on those exams. And so we knew his capacity. We knew his responsibility. And so it was being aware of that. Not every one of our kids was a B student or an A student. But knowing they've got different levels, are they doing their best or are they sloughing? You can have an A student that's getting Bs that you should challenge and saying, listen, you're getting by here. What's going on? And the other way, that you've got a C student that's getting a B, man, you should just be tearing it up with celebrating because that's a huge thing.
What did you do about teenagers that have friends that are maybe not good influences on them?
Pray. No. Go ahead.
Well, you've got your answers. We
encourage them to be a leader in that friendship, not a follower. Ask their friends questions, value questions, and then ask them, what do you think their choices of these friends that they're making? And as parents, start knowing their friendships early on in the early grades, you know, elementary, and encourage to get together and know their friends, have them over.
And that's... know who your children's friends are and know who their parents are and what value systems that they have and embrace. There's some parents that are not Christians that have a very good value system, sometimes better than parents that are Christians. That, and just being aware of that, core value is important. I mean, that they believe in Jesus Christ. But some of them... mesh even though they're not a believer, but their values meshed well with our values.
But again, you said start early.
In Proverbs 12:26, it says, a righteous man is cautious in friendship, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. So we just encourage our kids to be a leader in their group of friendships and strong core of friendships that have same values and beliefs, and not to put the non-Christian aside because you want to help them share the Lord to them, but to be have them be pulling them up instead of them taking them or, you know, taking them down, I guess is I'd say.
Did you have curfews for your teenagers?
Our saying was, nothing good happens after midnight. So I guess you could say that's a curfew.
We use that one often. Nothing good ever happens after midnight. 1 Thessalonians 5, 7 through 8, for those who sleep, sleep at night. And those who get drunk at night. But since we belong to the day, let us be self-controlled, putting on faith and love as a breastplate and the hope of salvation as a helmet.
Now, there was times that was past midnight, but then we knew. We knew. So.
You can talk to Brian, Officer Brian Johnson, about that timing of bad things happening.
How did you help them grow in their relationship with Jesus Christ during their teen years? And I just want to add my my secret question that you didn't get to was how do you deal with making your children go to church or attitude that they might have about having to go to church on Sundays?
For those that don't know, my story is I was a dairy farmer for 13 years prior to being a pastor. And so our older ones then had this world of farming, and now I'm a pastor and the expectation there. Our church was just very good, and River of Life through the years have been fantastic to our children. They've encouraged them, prayed for them, never railed on them unjustly. They've been very supportive. And sometimes churches can be the culprits, and this church hasn't been. We were always careful about, you know, because often you're there early and they're late. And so anytime we can have something, we always have goodies afterwards and coffee. So if they're hanging around and everyone's leaving and we've got just a couple left things left to do and they say, hey, can I have a cookie? Have the rest. And whatever bonuses we could have for them, and then there's bonuses of them getting to meet different pastors, missionaries, and such. But we were always very careful of that aspect. And did we ever have a time where our kids said, I don't want to go?
Not verbally to us. Now, if you ask them now, they might say different.
You know what would have been smart for us as parents? We think of this at post. Would have been, hey, guess what, kids? We value church and gathering, and it might be that for teenagers, their youth group is their spiritual vitality, and they just can't wait to go, and the regular Sunday might not be as exciting. Maybe a smart step would have been say, you know, out of 52 weeks, we're going to give you 3 passes, so to speak, or pick a number. Don't say 27 passes. But 3 passes. You use them anytime you want. If you want to sleep in, you know, use that pass. That would have been kind of a smart thing, huh?
Good question. You want your other?
Let's do this, Eleven, because it kind of goes off of what we just said. One of your children shared that he drafted in your faith and felt it would have been helpful if you challenged him in his personal growth. How can we promote them growing in their own relationship with Christ and not just kind of piggybacking off of our own faith?
You know, I was in nursery when our kids were up here, and just hearing this, it just reminds me of when I accepted the Lord. I remember it was at a crusade meeting in Mound, and I remember the kids were young kids when the message started. Were to go down dismissed, and we had our own. They had their own thing for the younger kids. And I remember when they did the salvation message, I just remember clearly the Holy Spirit speaking to me, saying, "You know, your salvation's on your parents. You know, you need to accept them yourself." And so that's when I accepted the Lord. And just hearing this and thinking more specifically, what we could do is maybe challenging them in their Bible reading, where they're at, or what questions they're asking the Lord, or get them involved in a missions group, or the trip.
Yeah, and ask them, I think there's questions we can ask that we didn't always ask, that I ask more now of them. Mm-hmm. What are you reading in the Bible? What part of the Bible are you reading? What's your reading program, so to speak? I mean, are you reading through, or are you just locked in on the Gospels or the Book of John? What's intriguing you? What questions do you have? Ask them what they're asking God about. What are you talking to God about? What are you asking him about? Maybe it's injustice issues, or they're needing clarity of which career to pick or school to go to. What are you asking God? And then I can join in with that prayer. Pointing them to books, podcasts. Rachel's favorite one is flatironschurch.com, where she can go through the archives and find different topics and nail them. You know, because there's things she's saying, well, what about the Nephilim? That's something that wasn't a big deal to me. In Genesis, is this passage about these giants where they, you know, and the sons of God married the sons of men. And it's, for some people, it's a big deal, and others it isn't. So she was asking me about that, and then say, well, what do you think? What conclusions have you come up with? So the internet is a great source. There's all kinds of podcasts, something that just fits their personality and type. This book here I brought, Wild at Heart, I went through this with my boys, and it opened up conversation and questions I don't think I ever would have had with them. And it just helped guide us through. I think I gave it to them at Christmas. I said, Christmas, boys, and I made sure I had another. This wasn't their only gift. I said, a gift I'm giving you that really would be a gift for me as well is that we together go through this book. And just kind of something that's workable and make it fun, that we'd go out to a coffee shop or something and walk through that. But it helped open up some doors that maybe were awkward, sensitive subjects, but there it is, and it's got questions. So find some material that's helpful. We didn't do really great on this. A lot was by osmosis, because they're here every service. We go to a lot of conferences. We bring them in. They saw a lot of things that were solid, some amazing things, healing services, those kind of things. They saw some wacky things as well. And you walk through all of it.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Got a couple left.
Let me do my other bonus question here. Okay. We're kind of really coming upon the tech age as far as cell phones, which this is just maybe before, I suppose, as your children were stepping out of teenagerhood. Mm-hmm. With cell phones, iPods, Facebook, what kind of limits how would you approach setting limits as far as what age they can start with cell phones and social media, and how to restrict the uses? I was a little nervous to ask this question because it's
a great question.
You could talk about what we did for the computer. I mean, I'm not real techie, so as far as being on the computer, that's probably where we mostly started when the kids were younger.
Yeah.
And
at that time I had Covenant Eyes.
Yeah.
Which was not a filter blocking. Because, again, one parent said, they're going to leave home and they're not going to have these blockages, so let's let the Holy Spirit be the block. Covenant Eyes is a reporting. Now we have Accountable to You. There's a number of other programs that you can have. So what Covenant Eyes did is anytime something was suspicious, then it would send a note saying, there was some suspicious activity. I can't remember the wording of it. What do you get now with Accountable to You?
I don't remember.
And so if they went on some websites, and we found out they went on, it started out with the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. And they were the young boys. So we talked about this with them, and there was some pornography that they gotten onto, and so we knew it, and we said, all right, who was on while they were all on. And they were all braced up for the big lecture, the big hit or whatever. And I said, you know what? God has wired you as young men to be drawn and attracted towards women. That's a God thing. But what you're looking at is not a God thing. And so we just came at it from that. And that was good. I was glad that the Lord didn't have me just jump on them and say how terrible and wicked and evil they were. And I would say the stats say 9 out of 10 have viewed pornography. I think concerning girls is probably 7 out of 10. It's just very available. Accessibility, no accountability. So we're encouraging our boys to have something like that. I have accountable to you right now is $10 a month. $10 a month? Yeah. And it's a reporting. We have it here, the church computer, the church laptop, my home computer, all linked together. So the last one that came up, there was an article. I'm trying to think of the title. And my good friend Bill, then, he'll get an alert on this. What was the title? If I do any searches on typically abortions, homosexual, that will come up. Anything sexual or sex in it will come up as a trigger and alert them. Anything with 3 X's in it will come up, or the word porn. If I'm looking up porn stats, then he'll get an email that says there was some questionable activity, and then he can go to accountable to you, and he'll look and see exactly what site I was on. So he'll say, okay, I see he was on a demographic site or a stat site. Or I see he was on girlies.com, and then he would have that conversation with me saying, what's going on here, Mark? So we didn't address the other. We kind of, Facebook, texting, usually at mealtimes, even now, we'll tease him and say, hey.
No, put those cell phones away.
Put them down.
Oh, and driving, make sure they're not texting while they're driving or calling. I'll say, are you driving? Yes, okay, call me when you get to your destination. Bye. That type of thing. Yeah. I don't know.
I think we're good. We probably should close out here.
We just feel we could have done so much better as parents. And I think maybe every parent feels that. But I'm amazed at how good our kids are. And I attribute that to Connie. I attribute that to the Lord. That at the base level, if you love your kids, you're going to do fine. If you love God and love your kids, He's going to get you through. So I want to close with prayer for all of us. Let's stand. Father, I thank you for not letting our mistakes mar our kids or wound them unnecessarily. I thank you for times that we've blown it and over tears we've come together and apologized. I thank you for times that our children have blown it and we found out and that we could move forward in forgiveness. I pray for each parent here and some that maybe worry about those teenage years. They're in the distance, but they've heard how terrible it is. I pray you just build them up with confidence that they can be the best times of their lives. And that's what Connie and I have experienced. For those who have had their teenagers long out of the house that maybe feel guilty of, Lord, there's that recapturing that's so wonderful that you always give us do-overs and mulligans when we honestly say, you know, there's a gap between myself and my son or my daughter. And that you can bridge those gaps. That work of reconciliation is so much your specialty and so on your heart. And you can just usher that in. Father, I thank you for the ones that are parenting here and want to do it well, that see that R-rated world around them. Thank you that you have the Holy Spirit and that when we call on your name, you are there to help us and answer us. in every circumstance. I pray blessings on each one. In Jesus' name, amen.